as a parent that when you have children, you are confronted with many trying moments. Moments that make you learn, that challenge your views and your understanding of the world. The thing is, you don't know what raising them might present, and the journey that you're walking with them is unknown. You want the best for them. I think parents dream of only the best for their children, but that's the best you can imagine, not necessarily what is going to be their life's path. I, for one, always go back to Khalil Gibran's wisdom and philosophy on children. And I'll see if I can share his writings on it a little bit later on. But the essence of it is that ultimately, children are life's desire to continue itself. He says briefly that your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They came through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. And he goes on. So we'll see if we can share the rest of that beautiful piece from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. You know, so years ago, when they were born, the doctor exclaimed, "It's a girl, it's a boy." You know, and you've been grateful to just have given birth to a very healthy child. Often that's that's what parents ask for. And you go with that belief. You relate to them from a very young age based on what we imagine to be associated to the identities, their physical expressions of their identities based on societal norms. You thought you had a girl, maybe then you thought you had a tomboy. But then one day you wake up and your child tells you that, in fact, they are in a different body, that they identify differently, that within themselves, they feel that they are a different person. So how do you start to take this journey with your transgender child? Because transgender children face uncertain futures. I think all children face uncertain futures, but in the world that we live in, there's so many more uncertainties for them because the world isolates, the world rejects, the world is even violent to transgendered people. And our current political climate is very harsh when it comes to understanding and learning and including those that identify differently to the heteronormative world that we have. So we've got Charmaine Hume in our Cape Town studios, and she is the parent of a transgender child. She's also a lecturer. She runs a private practice specializing in trauma, and she also works as a referral officer for Lifeline, and she runs a family support group for parents of trans children. We'll take your comments, your questions in the course of our conversation with her. The lines are open on 011-883-0702 and 31702 for your SMSs. Your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. We take those with your voice notes. And on Twitter, it's @Azania_and @Radio702. Good afternoon, Charmaine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Azania. Thanks for having me.
You know, I know that we have the rest of the hour to talk about this, but I want to first start by understanding the journey that you've shared with me about how you ended up in psychology and some of the things that had been going on in your life. Do you feel that how you ended up in psychology in large was also part of preparing you for this moment of your child telling you that that he is trans?
I think one would hope so, Azania, but nothing prepares you really for a situation like this because it's just something that you don't even consider.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, yes, the psychology helped. The fact that I'd already started studying psychology did help me to process it for myself, whereas probably I might have needed to go for therapy. For me, having studied the psychology and the understanding of what processing trauma is about, I could do it myself, but it was still, it's a huge thing.
Yes, yes. So you have two children?
Three.
Three. And
three children, yes.
And this particular child was your oldest?
Yes.
And was born, and I know that we will get to understanding and talking about things like pronouns, but we will look at this, say, before the disclosure. So, and your child was born a girl?
Yes.
In your understanding and in how you raised her.
Yes, and I was so excited that my first child was a girl because in studying families and looking at the placing of a child, I always wanted a girl first because my understanding was that if I have an oldest daughter, she'll take care of her parents and she'll take care of her younger siblings,
mm-hmm.
whereas my son may not take that role on as easily as a daughter would.
Right. Well, I do have to take headlines, and we'll continue our conversation with Charmaine Hume, who is a psychologist. She is a lecturer, and she has committed so much of her life to working in this space, not only specializing in trauma and also working as a referral officer for Lifeline, but also providing support for parents with trans children. So we'll talk about how her child disclosed to her and some of the things that were going on and the journey that they have walked. Maybe it's a conversation you can relate to. You've been in similar shoes. We'll take your calls and comments on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. But there's definitely no manual on how to raise children. When you're raising a trans child, a transgender child, you may also have to acquire new knowledge you may have never thought you needed. So this afternoon, we're chatting to Charmaine Hume, who's a parent of a transgender child. She lectures and she also runs a private practice, and she's given much of her time to running a family support group for parents with trans children. And the reality is that children face different struggles, and hopefully in an ideal world, they will feel comfortable enough to speak to their families. But that's not always the case. Even well-meaning parents who wish to support their children may not know how to do so. Charmaine, thank you for staying with us. And we had started our conversation by just having a brief understanding of your background. You know, parent to three children. Yes. Your oldest child then disclosed to you that that they are transgender. How did this come about?
Well, my child was always different. Mm-hmm. She was never a girly girl. Mm-hmm. As much as I wanted, I always used to buy dresses with bows, and she'd run around in the dresses and pull the bows off, and was always crying, wanted to wear shorts and her brother's pajamas and that sort of thing. And I just thought, you know what, if this is what the child wants, then we'll go with it. She's a girl, and when she hits puberty, and she'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Everything will be fine. But then when she hit puberty, we still thought this is a tomboy. And I then noticed my child getting depressed. She didn't want to shower or bath. She would only shower at night after I forced her to shower, and then she'd shower with the lights off. Mm. And we just thought that this child had depression, that there was something maybe going on. And mm-hmm. she kept saying, I'm a freak. I don't feel like I fit into this world. And we always try to unpack that and try to sort out what it was that she was saying. But we never got to the bottom of it.
Mm.
And then the night before her 18th birthday, friends of hers called me to say, you know, just keep an eye on your child, because she's not behaving well. She seems very depressed, and she was talking of taking her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I need to keep an eye on this. But I thought, I don't have to worry, because I don't keep any medication in my house. If I do keep anything, it's generic, and it's not major, you know, medications you need a prescription for. So she'd be fine. There's no sleeping tablets. There's nothing that she can take.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her brother, because they were sharing the space downstairs, when your sister goes to bed, just keep an eye on her for me, please. And my husband was in China at the time. And unbeknown to me, she called my pharmacy and said, because we've been with that pharmacist for many years, so he knows us personally.
Yeah.
And she said, my mom's got a, you know, really not sleeping well, and she's stressing out, and she asked me to call you to please send her a box of sleeping tablets.
Mm.
And that's how she got hold of the sleeping tablets. And then tried to take her life. I found her, my son, I don't know, I just got this feeling. Mm. And my son downstairs said, Mom, but, you know, she's making these noises, and you need to come and have a look. And she was actually hallucinating.
Yeah.
And what had happened was she'd taken it with a syrup that she had as a baby to add it to that to make sure that she didn't make that the next morning.
Yeah.
And this, fortunately, one reacted against the other, and this caused her to have these hallucinations. Mm. And we got her to the hospital. And yet, after that whole scenario, nothing came out. She never said anything to us.
Mm.
Didn't want to talk to us about it. I got to a psychologist, and nothing around gender came out.
Yeah.
And then the night before her 19th birthday, I was in bed, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, my phone goes. I answer it. It's her, and she's crying. I can't hear what she's saying. She's not audible at all. I said, what is going on? She said, tell me what is going on. Please just calm down. And I thought maybe she'd been attacked.
Mm.
And they'd been to a club. Maybe, God forbid, someone had raped her. I didn't know what was going on, because she was just so distraught. Mm. Eventually got her to calm down. She said, Mommy, please come fetch me. So I said to her, where are you? She said, I don't know. I've driven the car somewhere up the side of the mountain. And if you don't come fetch me, Mommy, I'm going to drive off the edge of this mountain.
Oh,
and I said, why would you do that? Because I can't live like this anymore. She said, but I saw how distraught you and Daddy were. And I don't want to do this, but I can't have control anymore because I cannot see light at the end of the tunnel. I don't want to live.
So was that the first expression of this conflict that she'd been living with?
Yes, yes. Mm. And I think that was my my biggest issue later on, where I thought, but here I am. At that stage, I was at my honours level. Here I am. I'm doing honours. I'm doing psychology. Why did I not pick this up? Why did I not see that my child was having this issue? I kept putting it down to tomboy. She's a tomboy. She's just enjoying doing boys' things. It'll come right. Why did I not see this?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on the phone, and I said to my husband, come drive me. I didn't even put my clothes on. I just went in my pajamas.
Yeah.
I said, come, just take me. Let's just go find him. We went up Signal Hill. We couldn't find him. We went up Table Mountain. We couldn't find him. Then I said, it must be Chapman's Peak. We have to get to Chapman's Peak. And I kept talking to her the whole time, telling her that we love her and that whatever it is, we can sort it out.
Yes.
And we get just towards Chapman's Peak, just before we get to the top, and I lose signal, and I'm hysterical. Mm-hmm. Because I think, while I'm talking to her, she's safe. But if I'm not talking to her, she's not going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my husband, just drive, just get there, and then we see her car. So I jump out the car, run to the car, don't see her, and I think, oh, my gosh, my child has gone and jumped off the side of the mountain, and I'm crying, and I'm running around. And then I come around the side of the car, because it's dark as well. It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I see her sitting against her tire, the back tire, rocking and crying. And I picked her up and I just held her. And then I put her in her passenger side seat and I got in the driver's seat and I drove her home and I kept just reaffirming my love for her,
yes,
my support and whatever this is. We lay in bed. I kept her in my bed. The next morning I called a psychiatrist. We had her admitted to the psychiatric ward. And 2 days later, the psychiatrist called us and said, I think your daughter's ready to talk to you and tell you what's going on. And when I walked in, my husband and I, she turned around and said, Mom and Dad, I don't know how to tell this to you, but I'm not a woman. I don't know how to relate to being a woman. I'm in the wrong body. I am a man in a woman's body. And it was as if someone had hit me in my solar plexus.
Mm.
I lost my breath for that moment. I thought in my head, oh, no, please, God, this can't be happening to me. This is not what I want. This is not what I signed up for. But outwardly, I didn't show that to my child. And I said, well, you see, look there now. Now you've told us what it is. Now we know what it is. Now we know we can work on it.
Yes.
Yes.
You can
Why
do
didn't
something.
You tell me this before? Look how easy it was. Now it's done. And immediately, I left then. Obviously, I cried. I went to my room. I lay on my bed and I asked God, why me? Why should this happen to me with everything else that's happened in our lives? Now, why do I have to have this? You know, I can't deal with this. And our journey started.
Yes. Knowing what you know now, Charmaine, do you think as parents, regardless of how our children express, how they present in the physical bodies they occupy, that we must just learn about gender and orientation as a matter of course anyway?
I think so. I think people need to realize, parents need to realize that nothing's ever black and white. There's no binary of male and female.
Yes.
That it is all on a continuum. We all have estrogen and testosterone within our beings. So we are all somewhere along the line of that continuum.
Mm.
Some of us just lie more towards male or others lie more to female, but it doesn't necessarily mean to say because I have a vagina that I'm going to lie more towards the female side of the balance. I could be anywhere in between, but I could still be female.
And the story that you've just shared just tells us how misgendering our children, how they feel, because it's actually denying their existence, their very existence as a person.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that really stuck in my mind was when my child said to me, Mommy, I'm so sorry I let you down. And I really thought about that before I answered, and I said, no, Cheryl, you haven't let me down.
Mm-hmm.
It's me letting myself down because I have placed these expectations on you. I just assumed that when I gave birth to you that you would grow up to be a girl, that you would get married. Those were my dreams. Those were my expectations.
Yes.
And they were wrong. I should not have placed those expectations on you.
Mm. And that's why I think, as just a starting point, that we would do all of us ourselves a favor, and perhaps also in how we relate to our children, if we start with that firm understanding of gender, of orientation, and everything that comes with it, and not to assume that the person is how they present. So it sets you on a journey. On an interesting journey, not just as continuing to parent her, but also in adding your voice and your efforts into this particular space. You joined an organization called Gender Dynamics, which has done great work over the years, especially in terms of highlighting the plight of transgender people in our society, things around the waiting lists, just the lack of will around the space. Take me through your involvement with Gender Dynamics.
Well, when my child came out to me, it was the first time I'd ever heard of anything like this. Mm-hmm. It was totally foreign to me. I went onto the internet. Everything was American or Canadian or from the Dutch. But I could never really find anything yet. And then I was talking around and asking young people. And then someone mentioned a woman by the name of Liesl Theron, who originally was the co-founder of Gender Dynamics. And she was just starting off. And we met, and then when I went through the journey with my child and I saw how difficult it was, that even though we had an act in place that allowed my child to change his documentation so that he could have his identity document changed, he could have his birth certificate changed, that he could get his passport in his male name, even though we have that in place, it still wasn't being executed. It still wasn't being put in place. I still had come up against great resistance at Home Affairs. And I then realized, but hold on a second, this is not only my child. There are others too. And once I'd helped him through his journey, I just felt that I can't stop there, that the other children who don't have parents, the other individuals who don't know where to go, I've been through this now, and I therefore need to give back. And I need to help those who can't.
And a forum where this kind of support and help would be available. So is that how the Trans Wellness Project also started, where you give these psychosocial services for transgender individuals, especially in the rural areas?
Yes, that we've just started recently, just 18 months to 2 years ago, when we realized working with Gender Dynamics and Triangle Project, and working with the Kritiske Transgender Clinic, that we realized that we're working with the individuals here, but there are those out in the country that don't have access to a clinic. They don't have access to a therapist. They don't have access to information. So we need to get the information out there. So we're printing booklets, and we're getting activists from those areas into Cape Town, and we're running workshops for them. I'm training them to counsel on a very basic level, educating them around gender, educating them so they can educate the parents, getting them to run parent workshops. So training on them how to work with groups.
Yeah.
And then obviously going into these areas and counseling and speaking.
Yes. Such important work. Charmaine, we are taking a break, and we also welcome comments and calls. My guest is Charmaine Hume, who's the parent of a transgender child. Her oldest child came out to her after having attempted suicide because of the conflict that resided within him, and he had to be honest, and at least it landed on parents who were willing and able to support him. But Charmaine's also a lecturer. She's a psychologist, and she runs a private practice specializing in trauma. And she's also a referral officer for Lifeline, and she's part of Trans Wellness Project. So after this, we look at the new chapter, what life has been like since her child came out to her and declared that he is a male, and what has gone on since, and the level of support and what it's meant for the family. 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. So how do you think you would deal with the prospects of your child telling you that they are in the wrong body, that they're in fact transgender? We're chatting to Charmaine Hume, a parent who has traveled this very journey with her oldest child. Charmaine, what did it mean for the family? Because this, no doubt, it affected dynamics, teaching and informing the younger siblings, even family and friends, because their privacy is also sacrosanct. It can't be dealt with as something that's like a prop, and you have to guard against that unwanted intrusion.
It was difficult. The surprising thing was that I thought my youngest daughter would not understand, and yet she was the one that was most understanding. She was the one that often turned around and said to me, I'll never forget when my son was at varsity, that she came, and they were having a student council meeting at the house, and she came running to me and said, Mommy, please, 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 I beg you, remember to say he.
Yeah.
Because even though I had accepted it and I was on this journey with my child, I still made mistakes. Mm. I still called her and she, and because for 19 years, that's what I had. I had a girl. And suddenly now it's like switch off a button and switch on another. And you just can't do that. And as much as you want to, you just can't. So it was difficult making that switch and continuously referring to with the correct pronouns.
Yes.
Using the correct.
And I find that people can be very dismissive of the importance of respecting this and also using the correct pronoun.
Yes, we had a lot of friends who, one friend in particular, who just refused and said, you know what, that is not what my religion is about. That's not what I believe in. And that is how she was born, and that is how I'm going to address her. And unfortunately, I had to
dispose
of that relationship.
Right.
Say, you know what, this is what it is, and we can no longer be friends, because if you cannot accept my child, then... Mm-hmm. You know, there's no basis for a relationship.
Yes. And I'm sure it's also been quite a lesson in letting your child lead in this process of self-discovery and you coming along on their journey and not imposing.
Of course. And for me in particular, at that stage, being a bit of a, what they call a helicopter mom.
Yeah.
It was difficult giving up and allowing him to then tell me and I think when I eventually did release that and say, okay, now it's your journey. I'm here to go on this journey with you. Now, where do we go to from here? Mm. It was a huge relief for me. It took off a lot of pressure off me. And it also gave him that autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really, I must say, very sensitive about it. Very often when I would say something, he'd say, don't worry, Mom, it's okay. It'll come, it'll happen, you'll see.
Is he happier?
Oh, I cannot believe I've got the same child. There's been no more depression. There's been no more outbursts. There's been no more not wanting to be with people. He's outgoing. He's moved to America. Mm-hmm. He got himself into a community college there. He wrote a couple of articles. They take 7 students out of 3,000. He got in. He found himself a job working for the English professor help him pay for his studies, and he's just flying, and thank God for that. If I look at him now, I could never imagine that I ever, ever gave birth to a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He's my son, and I love him, and I am so proud of him, and I'm so proud that I have been able to go on that journey with him.
Right.
What he's done for me, he often said, like on Mother's Day now, that he wouldn't have been without me. And I said, no, Tyler, I have become who I am because of who you are.
Mm.
And that's so true. He has changed me. He has put me on this journey. And it's just been the most incredible thing.
Your conversations must be quite fascinating, especially when you reflect on how it felt for him to be in a body that he didn't identify with and living in a world that was saying this is how you should be when everything in him was resisting.
Yes, having to fight it all the time within yourself, and then having no one else even prepared to acknowledge or consider that anything could be different and that it could be okay to be different, instead of condemning you the whole time and saying, no, you can't, conform. It was hard, and it was challenging for him, I know that, and that is why he had so many dark places, and that's why he tried to take his life. And
yeah.
I can understand that now. I couldn't then. I thought I failed. Mm-hmm. I thought I was a failure as a mother, that I had created this.
You see, and that's why I absolutely love this Khalil Gibran poem, because from the time my children were young, his philosophy on children, from the time they were young, I've stumbled upon it, and I go back to it time and time again, just as that reminder that, yes, they may have come through you, but they are not from you. you know, that mm-hmm. they are life's desire to continue itself. And it's, he simply says, you are the bow from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, and his arrow may go swift and far. So let your bend, let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness. So it just always reminds me mm-hmm. that ultimately they're also here to walk their journey, not be models of what I've imagined or dreamt of. And that also releases you in a way to let it unfold.
Absolutely. I think that my greatest lesson then, obviously with my other children, is to allow them that space to do their own thing. And my daughter's also sort of done a couple of things. Wanted to go and listen to all kind of music and coming into the house with it, and I would sit with her and I would listen to it, even though I would be cringing inside. I knew this is what she wanted, and then I was, that's great, baby, I really enjoyed that. But couldn't wait to get out the room, but didn't want to say anything to her, but embracing that and saying, you know what, I hate that music.
Yes.
But if it's what she enjoys, I have to allow her to enjoy it, and I have to allow the freedom of my home to enjoy it in.
Oh, absolutely. I hope you find that title for your book. Have you found it?
I hope so too.
Yes, I can't wait. I can't wait. I think it'll be a great tool for many people who are struggling with a story similar to yours.
Absolutely. And if any of your listeners have any good ideas about this, the name for that book, that would be great.
You welcome it. All right. We'll forward whatever comes up. Charmaine, thank you so much. Thank you for your generosity of allowing us in and just understanding each other through your story.
No problem. It was my pleasure sharing. And if I touched one person, if I made a difference in one life, then this interview was 100% worth it.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you very much, Charmaine.